Hi everyone, I'm Alistair Willis, music director of the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. I began conducting at Bristol University in England, continued my studies at Rice University in Houston, then at Aspen and Tanglewood. I've held assistant conductor positions with the Cincinnati and Seattle Symphonies and guest conducted all over the world. If I had to name two career highlights, they'd have to be working with Yo-Yo Ma and his award-winning Silk Road Ensemble, and receiving a Grammy nomination in 2009 for Best Classical Recording. When I was younger, several inspiring conductors helped make music come alive for me. Music became more than scales and black and white notes on the page, and suddenly it had meaning, interest, depth, excitement, and I couldn't get enough. Since then, one of my favorite things to do is to return the favor for others in concert, pre-concert talks, or podcasts. Today, I'm going to delve into three pieces of music that mean a lot to me and will hopefully bring the music more to life for you. Those pieces are The Four Seasons by Antonio Vivaldi, El Amor Brujo by Manuel de Falla, and Sinfonia for Orbiting Spheres by Missy Mazzoli. I first heard of the American composer Missy Mazzoli about 5 years ago from a friend of mine who said, "Watch out for her, she's going to be big." And boy, was he right. She's one of today's most inventive living composers and has made an incredible name for herself in a very short time in the classical music world. She's been called a post-millennial Mozart, has composed 5 operas, works for full orchestra, small orchestra, soloist, chamber music, 3 film scores, been performed all over the world, and is currently the composer in residence with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Last year, she made history when she became one of the first 2 women to be commissioned by the Metropolitan Opera. Let's look at a piece of hers she composed in 2013 for the Los Angeles Philharmonic called Sinfonia for Orbiting Spheres. Okay, what a title. Let's break it down. The word sinfonia has 2 meanings, both of which apply to her piece. It refers to Baroque works for small orchestra, and is also the Italian term for a hurdy-gurdy. A hurdy-gurdy, as we all know, well, I had forgotten, so I had to look it up, is a medieval stringed instrument with constant wheezing drones that are cranked out under melodies played on an attached keyboard. If you can't picture that, well, here's what it sounds like. Orbiting spheres refers to the musical design of Missy's piece. She says in her program note that the music is, quote, in the shape of a solar system, a collection of rococo, or baroque, loops that twist around each other within a larger orbit. Wow. Okay, how does she do this? First, the drones. Well, that's easy because any instrument can play long-held notes. But Missy requests an instrument that's rarely found in classical orchestral music, the harmonica. 8 musicians play harmonicas, as well as their regular instruments, as part of the drone, the hurdy-gurdy drone. Well, a harmonica is unique in that it makes one sound when you blow out and a different sound when you breathe in. I'm sure we can all recognize the sound of a harmonica. We may have even played one before or owned one as a kid. I certainly remember driving my parents crazy with mine, and I actually still have it, and will try to demonstrate. First off, blowing out into a harmonica sounds like this. Breathing in sounds like this. And the drones in Missy's piece start very soft and get louder, then return to being softer again, all as if in slow motion. It's what's known as a crescendo and diminuendo, and something like this. Well, Missy gives the harmonica responsibilities to the woodwind and brass players, probably because they're used to doing that a lot on their standard instruments. Not because the string players don't have the breath control to do that. I'm sure they do. But it leaves the strings to play the melody fragments that loop and weave in and out of each other at different speeds. And the effect of all of that is a wash of sound, which to me sounds a little like playing the piano while holding down the sustain pedal. Several of the notes slide or glissando into the next note. So let's listen to a little of it. This is part of a performance by the Stony Brook University Orchestra, conducted by Michael Morgan. This is what I like to call weightless music. Very atmospheric, yes, pun intended, where we as listeners float with the music. Did you hear the harmonica drones? Okay, I admit it's hard to hear them on this recording, but they're there in the background, I promise you. Easier to hear in a live performance. The piece floats and churns away, and at the end of it, it feels to me that we are flung into space. Well, I hope that you enjoy her piece on our concert. And in 10 years' time, when she's an even bigger name, you can say, Missy Mazzoli? Yeah, I heard a cool piece of hers with the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Remember those cool harmonicas? Next up is Ballet Music by one of Spain's most important composers during the first half of the 20th century, Manuel de Falla. When I hear Falla's music, whether it's his Nights in the Garden of Spain or the Sombrero Tres Picos, the three-cornered hat, I hear a musical language whose DNA is precisely Spanish. I grew up being told that Spain was a hot, fiery, passionate country full of flamenco dancing, romance, and bullfighting. And I still hear all that in Falla's music. You could say he's a very nationalistic composer who fills his music with the sounds, rhythms, folk songs, and folk-like melodies of Spain. That said, Falla spent several significant years in Paris, which was then the world's artistic center, thanks to the residency of the most famous ballet company in the world, the Ballet Russe from St. Petersburg, Russia, led by their legendary impresario Serge Diaghilev. Diaghilev's extraordinary vision of combining the best artists, best dancers, choreographers, musicians, and composers resulted in a golden age of collaborations that has never since been equaled. And along with composers like Stravinsky, Debussy, and Ravel, Manuel de Falla's music attracted Diaghilev's attention. And it was his ballet El Amor Brujo that led Diaghilev to commission him. El Amor Brujo, which means Love, the Sorcerer, has a great story revolving around love, dance, and death. It's set in a gitano village in Andalusia. The handsome Carmelo is in love with the sensual Candela, but the ghost of Candela's first husband haunts their love affair. The husband had been unfaithful, and Candela entices her friend Lucia to flirt with and distract the ghost. Lucia is successful, and Candela and Carmelo proceed to have a fulfilled relationship. Now, with a story like that, we'd expect the music to be gripping, full of drama, tension, passion, and sensuous melodies. And guess what? It is. The dance rhythms are so contagious that I can't sit still when I hear it. Let's listen to the ballet's most famous music, the Ritual Fire Dance, also known as the Song of the Will-o'-the-Wisp, which is a song about the vanishing nature of love. And finally, the Italian composer Antonio Vivaldi's best-known work, The Four Seasons. I would bet that everyone has heard this music, or at least part of it, either in concert or on the radio, in a movie, or an elevator. Sound familiar? That's the opening of his spring season. But why are the seasons so famous? What makes them so special? Well, I can think of several reasons. To start, the four seasons are examples of what we call program music. Music that pictorially describes something. In this case, spring, summer, autumn, and winter. Now, that's nothing new to us today. But this was boldly experimental back in the year 1725. Vivaldi led by example in a time of innovation and experimentation during the Italian Baroque. Vivaldi prefaces each season with a sonetto dimostrativo, an explanatory sonnet, just in case there's any doubt of what the music is describing. The words that go to the music we just heard are, "Spring is come. The festive birds salute it with their merry songs." And what else? Well, the four seasons are great examples of violin concertos. Today we know lots of violin concertos, but how many violin concertos had been composed by 1725? The answer is not many. The father of the concerto is generally considered to be one of Vivaldi's peers, Giuseppe Torelli. But it was Vivaldi who established the concerto form as we know it today, having three movements, the alternation between solo and tutti passages, elevating the role of the orchestra when the soloist wasn't playing, and so on. Vivaldi had a lot of practice. He composed over 400 concertos, which include the Four Seasons. And the fact that the seasons are violin concertos might not be by chance. The greatest violin maker in history, Antonio Stradivari, was in nearby Cremona and only a generation older than Vivaldi. And the rival violin-making Guarneri family were producing magnificent violins at the very time Vivaldi was writing his concertos. There's also a big anniversary coming up. The Four Seasons were published in 1725, but we know that they existed before that, because Vivaldi indicates in their dedication that he'd played them often before publishing. So there's every chance that we could be right on their 300th anniversary. 300 years, wow, that's astonishing to consider. Well, above all, I think one of the main reasons the Four Seasons are so famous and beloved is that they are unique and contain so much originality. We'll be projecting the poems in real time during the performance. And some of my favorite things to listen to are all of the bird sounds, the moment in spring where the violas portray the sleeping goat herd's barking dog, and in summer, the vivid thunder and lightning in the storm at the end. If I had to choose a favorite season, it would have to be winter, because it's the first I not only recall hearing, but also studying. When I was at school in England, winter was our set work for a whole year, meaning we studied, played, analyzed that score to the nth degree. Now, what helped, of course, was having two really inspiring music teachers, Keith Simpson and Jane Platt, who brought out its treasures, resulting in my lifelong love of this music. It's music that still conjures up vivid cinematic pictures in my imagination as I listen. We loved stamping our frozen feet and actually chattering our teeth along with the icy music, as the poem indicates. Here are the chattering teeth and stamping feet moments. You may have been to a performance where there was either a conductor or no conductor, where the soloist instead leads from the violin, as Vivaldi himself undoubtedly would have done. I've experienced both in concert, and both work. When I have a young, inexperienced soloist, I can help by conducting. But when I have a renowned, seasoned soloist, I like to completely step aside and let the soloist be in full control. I feel this results in a better and deeper musical experience for everyone, the musicians and the audience. For our performance with the South Bend Symphony Orchestra, we have invited the renowned violinist Ilya Kaler to lead from the violin. Mr. Kaler has performed with the world's top orchestras, has taught at Eastman School of Music, Indiana University in Bloomington, and currently teaches at the Cleveland Institute of Music. We can't wait to welcome him, and you too, to our concert. I hope you found this interesting and helpful. Thanks for listening.